This is After the Gridiron, a podcast featuring interviews with retired football players. If you're a fan of After the Gridiron, make sure you subscribe to the show to ensure that you won't miss an episode. Today's episode is sponsored by Symphonies. Symphonies is an online store that provides custom clothing and accessories. They have a number of quality products available at affordable prices. They offer custom, unique, funny, and inspirational products that you won't find anywhere else. So go to www.symphonies.ca to shop for your next purchase. And as a special offer for our listeners, enter promo code GRIDIRON to get 15% off your purchase. So there's no excuse not to check it out. Again, that's www.symphonies.ca. Symphonies. Great products, great prices. Okay, everyone, and welcome to another episode of After the Gridiron. I am your host, Lyle Green, and we have another great guest lineup for you today. Today we have former CFL and NFL player Jordan Sullen. So Jordan played 3.5 years of professional football. He spent time with the Denver Broncos, Pittsburgh Steelers, Chicago Bears, and Carolina Panthers. And he also spent some time up in the CFL with the Hamilton Tigercats and Toronto Argonauts. And he graduated from Tulane University, had a great career there at Tulane, was a team captain his senior year, so had a good career there. And now after football, he is a children's author. He's written a couple books that were just released called Flower, Flower, Give Her Power, and also Mally in the Middle. And those can be bought and found on Amazon.com, and I'll have links to those in the show notes. So, Jordan, thank you for coming on, and welcome to the show.
Great, man. I'm really glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no problem. No problem. So I always start off by asking my guests to say something about them that most people wouldn't know about them. So what would that be for you? What's something about you that most people don't know about you?
Honestly, the one thing that stands out the most about me, especially with my career as a football player, most people don't know that, you know, I'm an artist, that I really have an artistic side to me. I'm a children's author and illustrator. So, you know, with the introduction, they kind of learned that. But I think that will be one of the most unique things about me is that I'm into those types of things. And I always have been since a kid.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. When you think of an athlete, you don't usually think of someone that's going to write children's books or be good at drawing and stuff like that. So, yeah. Yeah. Breaking the mold today here.
Right.
All right. So let's go back to the beginning and talk about when you started playing football. When did you start? Were you a late bloomer or did you start from a young age?
I really started at a young age. I started when I was about 6 years old. Cut off playground, Lower Eldridge community. That's where I grew up at. So a lot of what I did sports wise all started at Cut Off Playground. From there, I transitioned on to middle school at Edna Carr High School, where I played sports. I juggled a few sports up until about ninth grade, and then I gave up on a few, but I stuck with track and football all the way through my senior year. I had a few opportunities to go to college to run track and play football on a dual scholarship, but really just fell more in love with football as I transitioned into Tulane, stayed into the city. So,
okay. So you played quite a few sports. So you track and football were your main sports, but what other sports did you play growing up?
I played baseball as a youngster. I also played basketball. Yeah, so those were my main four. Anything other than that, we just kind of played around with as kids, but those are my main
Nothing
four.
Organized. Yeah, those are the organized ones. Okay. And did you have a favorite? Was football your favorite growing up or track, or was something else?
Yeah, football was my favorite, but honestly, in high school, I was just as happy to be a track athlete, mainly because I was a state champion a few times, and I was runner up a few times in high school as a hurdler, won a few state championships on a relay team, 4x2. 4x4, so I have a lot of experience with track. A lot of who I am today is because of my days as a track athlete with staying conditioned, metabolism, things of that nature. So it's really been, you know, I really, really owe it all to my track coaches just as much as my football coaches.
Okay, so yeah, track definitely helped you on the football field.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so was, and you mentioned getting some scholarship opportunities in track as well. Is that something you wanted to pursue? Did you think that you could be maybe Olympian or something like that to get to that level in track? Or is it always kind of football and track was just kind of there to stay in shape?
Honestly, you know, in high school, Coach Jaluk put a lot of pressure on us as youngsters, really. And from there, in our off seasons, he definitely suggested that we run track. But like I said, I've always really had a passion for track, honestly. And this is just me keeping it real with you. Yeah. I know for a fact that I could have been an Olympian as a hurdler. I often think about it, especially when these years come around like this, where the Olympics is up, and I'm still around guys that are still competing for Olympics trials and things of that nature. So, you know, seeing these guys get after it and really compete for that one opportunity just makes me think sometimes, like, damn, like I really wish I would have stuck with track and just did it with football, because I see a lot of guys still play as pros and still transition into track in their off seasons and the Olympics and things like that. Guys like Marquise Goodwin and things like that, and, you know, guys like that.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's always, sometimes in life where you kind of have moments where you kind of wonder what if you went in a different path. I know for me, it was hockey. I was a hockey player as well growing up. And it's kind of, sometimes you wonder what how far I could have went in hockey, but I'm happy with, happy with the path that I took, and definitely things still worked out for me as they did for you. It definitely worked out for you as well. But there's always those moments of what could have happened, right?
Right, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so you're good at track. So what kind of times were you running? Were you running state champion in track?
So a lot of my splits with the 4x2, I was sub 21. We had some high 20s. We had a really, really good 4x2 track team. So I got, a lot of us, we were, neck and neck for a lot of those times. And there were times where I would run either second leg or fourth leg. In regards to hurdles, that's where I really, really held it down at 300 hurdles, high hurdles. Well, I'm sorry, low hurdles is 300 hurdles. Best time I posted was, I think, 36.89 or something like that. As far as 110 hurdles, high 14s or like mid 14s, but I was always in qualifying for the state championship. There were a few times, like I said, I fell short. I remember some of the guys that I, were neck and neck with. When you got to times like the state championship, it was always at LSU, so it was in Baton Rouge at LSU's track stadium. And, there were times where we get so heated and those hurdles are so close together that, you're kicking one guy's hurdle down, he's kicking yours down, and then you fall and you literally win by hair.
Hurdles there is, one of the kind of the most physical of the track events where, the guys are bumping and hitting hurdles and doing all those type of things. So, it can be kind of, hit and miss with who wins and misses hurdles and stuff like that. So, but down there in LSU, they always have a great track program as far as I
always recall.
Always good in track. So must be lots of great track athletes coming out of that area like yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so talk about speaking of LSU, talk about recruitment and being going to Tulane. You chose Tulane over other schools, and I know you mentioned getting recruited in track as well. So talk about your choice of Tulane and why you end up choosing them over other schools.
The main reason that I can think of as to why I chose Tulane over the schools that were interested in me is my grandmother was a little sick at the time, and going into the year of 2010, which was a year after my freshman year, she ended up passing away. But aside from that, there were schools that were really, really high on my radar. Like UConn, I thought for sure I would have went to UConn. I always was in love with Georgia Tech, but having coaches that just really guided me in the right direction, let me know that Georgia Tech just wouldn't be a smart move as a wide receiver because they ran the triple option and things like that. Me and my closest friends since 6 years old, we went to Tulane together, but Kansas State had drawn a lot of interest in us, but one of our linemen who's still playing in the NFL, he's actually a KSU grad, so he finished up at KSU, and one of my other friends that we grew up with, ULL, the ULMs, the in-state schools, so definitely had some offers. A lot of in-state schools, LSU did not offer me, so that was kind of a bummer. I had the opportunity to play in front of Les Miles and had a really good game, but clearly it wasn't good enough. But, you know, no hard feelings. I've always loved watching LSU, and I have enough friends that went there and that have had a lot of success that I just kind of live vicariously through that. So, you know, we sit back and we laugh at it now.
Yeah. Well, they're having obviously a great season this year with the championship game coming up.
In New Orleans at that.
In New Orleans, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, kind of a home game for them. So I guess I don't have to ask who you're cheering for in that game coming up.
LSU for sure, man. And, most people would definitely, listen to me say that and like, wow, you went to Tulane and you're cheering for LSU. Well, that's more of an old school rivalry. But, fact of the matter is, like I said, growing up, we had guys that came from out of my neighborhood that were fortunate enough to go to LSU on full ride. So one of LSU's first round draft picks was actually grew up in the same community as me. So, seeing guys like that have a lot of success, really allowed me to cheer for LSU without any harsh criticism as a kid until I got to Tulane. But nowadays it's really, honor and a pleasure to see the in-state schools like LSU and even my alma mater at Tulane, having a lot of success. So,
Yeah, definitely. All right, so let's talk about your time at Tulane. Like you said, you chose Tulane to go to university. So talk about your time there and how things went for you.
Looking back at it, at this age, I'm really, really thankful that I chose Tulane over the opportunities that were presented to me, mainly because, as they always talk about, Tulane is very much a university of higher education, prestigious university. You meet a lot of good people. It's crazy to think of, no matter how far I've gone for football, whether that be in the States or Canada, I always, always, always meet somebody that went to Tulane. And they're always willing to bend over backwards to either help me, be a resource to me, and keep in contact with me and let me know that if I should need anything, I can always get back in contact with them. So, Tulane opened up a really, really wide world of networking for me and really taught me things like, the value behind networking. And, when you do get a college degree, that it extends a little bit further than when you actually make connections with people. Yes, you can have a degree, a really great degree. You can have a master's. You can have all of that stuff. But Tulane really teaches you the value of meeting people and keeping those lines of communication open with those people far beyond college, especially with it being a private university, not that big of a student population. In a city like New Orleans, where people like to talk and be social. So Tulane, it just really, really, allowed me to come out of my shell, really allowed me to come out of my bubble and meet people that I still keep in contact with today. So I'm thankful for that.
Yeah, that's one thing you can kind of learn as you go along that, making connections is key, and having that network of people that you can rely on and go back to and talk with is a big key in life after football for sure. So having a university where there's a lot of that interaction and a lot of that communication is definitely helpful and definitely good for life after football.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so let's fast forward to your senior year. You had one of the team captains on the team, and after season, draft time comes around, and didn't get drafted. But talk about that process of going to sign as a free agent, undrafted free agent, and talk about if there was any feeling that you might get drafted, or how that went for you.
Yeah, honestly, I did have a feeling that I would get drafted. Even coming out of my junior year, obviously I didn't have any thoughts of leaving school early, especially because I wanted to get my degree. But I was in talks with teams like my size, teams like my speed, teams liked a lot of what I could bring to the table, the potential that lied in everything that I had to offer. But I would definitely say that that process is more strenuous than a lot of guys probably talk about, especially because, whether you're coming out of a losing season, your senior year, or you're coming out of a bowl game. Fortunately, I was able to come out of a bowl game, but I was coming out of a bowl game that I actually suffered from a head injury in. So I snapped out of it really quick, but it looked a lot worse on TV than what it actually was. And coming out of that, that little quick injury, that next Monday I was right back in the gym training and preparing for pro day and things of that nature. So Yeah. I take the process very seriously. I was fortunate enough to train with guys like Derek Joseph, who was also a Tulane alumni. He played on one of those undefeated teams and played with guys. He's also an in-state guy. He's from the city of New Orleans, went to Shaw High School. But, you know, I trained with him, and honestly, a lot of who I became as an athlete, even as a pro, speed-wise, taking care of my body, looking the part, I owe a lot of that to Derek Joseph, because I spent so much time there from the year 2012 all the way to through my years of being a pro. And it's crazy. The more I would promote being with DJ, the more guys look for people to train with going into their combine days. And I would always refer Derek. And even now, Derek is still reeling in a lot of Tulane guys, a lot of guys that went to in-state schools. Agents are calling him and reaching out to him to get their guys together. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So what's his approach? What does he do that most people don't do, or most trainers don't do?
Main thing I would say about Derek. Derek was a really he was a speedster. So him coming out of high school, he was one of the fastest guys in the state. He was like, you know, he was the Vic type, really coming out of high school, being that kind of fast and that kind of deadly with his feet. He just was unbelievably fast. So he, you know, after his years of playing, he didn't go pro, but after his years of playing, you know, he learned how to teach that to guys and how to help them with speed. So his focus has been speed. Everybody knows the one thing you must have going into the league is obviously speed. If you don't have anything else, you know, a lot of the other attributes that you might be lacking, speed can overcome that. And Derek does help a lot of guys with that. And I'm one of those guys that he's helped, and he's still helping guys, Tulane guys especially, Shaw guys, in-state guys, city guys. He's still helping guys to this day.
Okay. Yeah, like you said, speed is definitely the one thing that they want to see. And like you said, if there's other things that you're lacking in, if you have speed, they feel like they can teach the other stuff. But the speed they can't teach. So if you have someone that can help you with that, then you're way ahead of the game for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So talk about going pros, and was it Denver that you first signed with as a free agent? So talk about your first day there and what it felt like to put on the pro jersey and to be in the NFL camp.
My first day in Denver was different, especially because, you know, me being from the South, I'm not used to snow. I'm not used to it being cold.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
I'm not used to it being cold in May. So little did I know we would, you know, pull up in Denver and it would be snowing and the sun would be shining at the same time. But the one thing
that your first time seeing snow?
No, it wasn't my first time. But it was very, very rare, because it has snowed in New Orleans before, but obviously rare. But the one thing that stood out the most for my first day in Denver is the first person that I ever met as a Denver Bronco was Peyton Manning. So Peyton Manning, a lot of people know this, a lot of people don't, but Peyton Manning is also a New Orleanian. So, me just sitting in my locker with no name tag on it, you know, undrafted guy just wondering, you know, like, how did I even get here? And Peyton walks up, introduces himself. As Peyton, obviously, I knew who he was, but, you know, that was a humbling moment for me, especially because, you know, you just don't see that every day. You see these guys on TV, people talk about how legendary they are, but, you know, as they always say, these people don't, the fans and everybody else don't see behind the scenes, and that was a behind-the-scenes moment for me, to meet Peyton, and for him to be that, you know, that generous enough to go out his way to introduce himself to an undrafted rookie guy like myself, and over time, you know, I met more guys like Peyton. Yeah.
It's great when you meet these guys and they're, you know, down to earth and they're humble. And like you said, a guy like Peyton coming to an undrafted rookie to come and introduce himself and to make himself accessible to him is not something that all players are going to do. But yeah, to have guys that do that is great and nice to see for sure.
Absolutely.
All right, so I got to ask, I know you're a cornerback and obviously he's a quarterback. Did you get to interceptions of Peyton in practice or?
No, I didn't. I didn't intercept Peyton at practice, but I did intercept Ben Roethlisberger at practice. And it was on Antonio Brown one time. It was freezing cold outside. Honestly, I almost felt like the ball caught me. I was obviously in good coverage, but, you know, I couldn't even really focus on what was going on because it was so damn cold outside. But I did pick off Ben Roethlisberger, and that's how we ended practice. So, you know, in those moments when you're a young guy, you know, practice squad, all that stuff, things of that nature, you pick off Ben Roethlisberger, against a starting offense, everybody goes crazy, and you know the guys are cheering and whatnot. So that was moment that stuck out to me most as well.
Yeah. Those are definitely moments. Yeah, you never forget, and definitely look back on and cherish as you get older. And
for sure.
And looking back on your time there, yeah. Okay, so yeah, let's. So was there a as a kid, is making the pros, is that something that you wanted to do? Did you aspire to make that, or was it something that just
I would say so, especially when you come from a small community like I did. You know, you typically have a lot of big dreamers. Everybody wants to make it out. Everybody wants to have the make it out story. So I'm fortunate enough to be one of those guys that quote unquote made it out. And, you know, you never really know what that outlet is going to be. Oftentimes it is sports. And for me, I can definitely say it was sports. But even looking back at it now, you know, I'm thankful that I have more gifts than just sports that can give me a platform to really impact people, talk about my gifts, put my gifts on display, and see how they might impact other people around the world, especially kids. Football was great as an athlete, but, you know, compared to what I'm doing now with these books and being a children's author, illustrator, working in health and wellness and being attached to fitness and things like that, you know, it's platforms that, you know, I get back to being ground level with people, not being behind the helmet, not being under shoulder pads, not being in, you know, pads and things of that nature, to where, you know, I can feel like I'm human again.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, yeah, before we get into more into what you're doing now and all the great things you're doing now, let's just quickly talk about your time up here in Canada. So I know you didn't really like the cold in Denver, but you ended up in Canada, which is a little bit colder within Hamilton and Toronto. So talk about your time up here in the CFL and what that was like for you.
CFL was cool, man. CFL was cool. It was a different experience than the NFL. You learn a lot. You learn a lot about the politics of CFL football compared to NFL football. You learn just how, you know, the pool is bigger for the CFL. You got a lot of guys that didn't make it per se in the NFL that are all on that short list, as they like to tell us, in the CFL. So you can be balling in the CFL, but Joe Blow might hit the market and then now it's time for you to go back to the States. So sometimes you really can't control those types of things. That's why I always been great at controlling what I could control and never really got caught up in who's who. And, you know, I just try to make sure I stay focused, especially while in Canada, because I heard so many different versions of stories and what people's career have been like out there. And honestly, I know for a fact that I was good enough to have a lasting career in Canada, probably good enough to still go back right now and play. But, you know, it's just a matter of just really figuring out if it was something for me, if there was longevity in it. Obviously, the money's different. But when you love the game, you know, you're able to overlook those types of things, because what's meant to be is going to be meant to be regardless. So, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, once the love of the game isn't as high as it once was, and you have other things that give you joy and give you passion that you want to pursue, and you know that football doesn't last forever. So yeah, once that joy is gone, you gotta find that thing that gives you that joy and fills that void that that you have of
absolutely playing.
All right, so talk about that transition for you. So talk about how you transitioned into life after football. So you mentioned you've always been artistic and love the arts and to draw and to create and write. So talk about your thought process near the end of your career and talking about and transitioning to what you want to do after football.
The funny thing about what I'm doing now is that, you know, honestly, I didn't even think I would be doing something like what I'm doing now. Yes, I always did think that I would try to find a way to impact people beyond football, but, you know, working in health and wellness, you know, I just didn't see it coming my way. I kind of was, you know, after I got released in Hamilton, went back home to New Orleans, got back to the drawing board. The characters that I have in my first book, those characters were created almost a decade ago. So I sat those and shelved those for a while. Yeah, so I shelved those for quite a while, until I figured out, you know, when it was time for me to really, really, really lock in and focus on creating a book, put a manuscript behind the characters and making it make sense. and obviously tying a life lesson to it for kids and for young adults and things like that. As far as working in health and wellness, though, obviously I was in the market like everybody else is for new opportunities and jobs on the same job platforms as everyone else, and stumbled across an opportunity to get myself out of a city like New Orleans. Small city, big city mentality, but Houston just had more opportunity, and Houston offered me an opportunity that I really couldn't pass up. I went to Austin to interview, kind of got the job on the spot, made a commitment to move out to Houston probably a week after that. From there, that opportunity turned into almost 2 years of me working for that company, and worked for them for quite a while, did some great work in Houston, health, wellness, fitness related, met a lot of great friends that'll probably be, you know, locked in with me for life. And I can definitely say that opportunity has propelled me to be in the position that I'm in now, to move to a city like Atlanta, which I just like Atlanta more than Houston. You know, my girlfriend lives here as well. And yeah, it was a great opportunity that I saw fitting, and it made sense to me, because if I was going to truly hang up my cleats, as they say, I have to find something that really, really bring me joy, but also bring other people joy. And I found that in working in health and wellness, mainly because I never really had to suffer with a history of injuries playing football or any sports. Somehow I've always known how to really, you know, dial it down when it was necessary, take care of my body, look the part, sharpen up on the little things. And somehow I've been able to step into positions to teach other people how to take care of their bodies, how important recovery is, how important longevity is, most importantly. And still to this day, you know, I'm meeting new guys that often ask me about some of the content that I might put on my Instagram, or, you know, just random things. And, you know, they always tell me like, damn, dude, you're always into all kind of stuff. But, you know, I don't like to be saturated. I don't like to be content. And this industry has definitely offered me opportunities to really keep learning and feel like I'm always a student of what I'm doing. So that's why I chose to be in health and wellness. Maybe there is something else out there for me. I do plan to go full time as an illustrator at some point in time, but, you know, me going full time as an illustrator wouldn't take away from what I'm doing now. I really, really love this industry, love the people that I work around, and the people that I have interactions with on a daily basis. And I can tell that it makes a difference, you know, when I'm giving them knowledge backed up that I've already practiced.
Yeah, definitely. It's always great to be able to impact people's lives and to help them in some capacity, and you're able to do that through your books and through the through health and wellness as well. So talk about what you do in health and the wellness. What exactly what areas do you help people in?
So the cool part about what I'm doing now is that, you know, very, very different than a traditional doctor's office. So, you know, when people are coming to the facility to see me, see my team, you know, they're coming to fix up on the little things that sometimes even the chiropractors can't even get fixed. I'm sure you've heard of cryotherapy before. So I work with a lot of cryotherapy. I work with a lot of cryogenic services. I've been working with these services for almost 2.5 years now. Some people are skeptics. A lot more people are believers when it comes to these services. And it's definitely made me a believer the more I've worked with it, and the more I've seen people go from having back pains consistently to doing literally 1 to 2 sessions and really thanking me for making a suggestion that I made to them. I've drawn a lot of people into these facilities, you know, that just really didn't know what they were doing. I mean, admittedly, I didn't really know what I was doing for a long time, but I got exposed to these services, and, you know, that's what I'm doing now. I work with cryogenics more than anything else, but, you know, I work with a lot of, cryo beauty services. Obviously, we have an esthetician that performs those types of services, but just helping people with anti-aging processes, recovery, maintenance, pain management over time. And it's crazy. The good thing about it is that it's so widespread from age range that, you know, I've worked with kids that are like 8 and 9 years old, might be a stud soccer player in Texas or Houston or Sugar Land somewhere, to dealing with the 80-year-old woman who likes to run a 5K just to have something to be proud of. So I meet all different walks of life in these types of environments. And, you know, I've definitely found a lot of gratitude in working in this environment.
And do that. Yeah, that's awesome. So for those that might not be fully aware of what cryotherapy is, so cryotherapy is like using cold
Yeah, so it's like using cold air, cold vapor.
Cold air, yeah.
Some people might, some cold vapor, some people might explain it. But nitrogen, liquid nitrogen, it's backed by liquid nitrogen. Some machines are different than others. We do have one of the better machines on the market at the facility that I work at. I work with different cryotherapy chambers and machines. Some are more prone to giving people nitrogen burn, but this one is very, very safe and a lot more reliable than some of the other ones that I've dealt with. Obviously, all of it can benefit you. All of it can get you really, really cold. But you also want to make sure that there's comfortability provided in these types of sessions and these types of environments. Everybody likes to think that they're claustrophobic. Fact of the matter is most people are not claustrophobic. But at the end of the day, cryotherapy is really, really great for helping reduce inflammation all throughout the body. As we, as most people know, some people don't. Inflammation is usually the root of what causes and spreads like wildfire for most diseases and internal sicknesses and internal joint pain and things of that nature. So that's the main thing. A lot of people fall in love with cryotherapy because it can help with boosting metabolism as well. People always call, people always ask, like, will it help me lose weight? No, it won't, but it can inhibit if you're living an active lifestyle. Yes, you will burn calories, but, you know, it's really, really up to what type of active lifestyle regimen you're living in, to see how, you know, these results affect you. But for everybody, it can definitely help with the reduction of pain.
That's awesome. That's a fairly new, I guess, technology or, treatments and,
Absolutely. Yeah. It's been more popular.
Yeah.
Been more Americanized over the past decade. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a good option for people to look into as well. So, so let's also talk about your books. So you are a new author. You put out a couple books: The Flower, Give Her Power, and Mally in the Middle. And you mentioned that for one of them, you had characters kind of started years ago, and then you just kind of went back to it. So what was the motivation for you to write these books and what just made you decide to go back to it and to make it reality?
Main reason I found myself, you know, going back to it, I consider art really to be one of my roots just as much as sports. So when I went back to my roots, you know, when I got released in Canada, you know, obviously I hit the market to look for opportunity for jobs, see what could keep money in my pockets, things of that nature. Obviously, to publish a book, it does take money, so I have to find a job to allow me to get back in touch with that gift of creating books and things like that. But
yeah,
main thing is that I've always had a really, really wild sense of imagination. I've always been considered different, sometimes even weird. But you know, that opportunity, it just felt like the right time. What felt like rejection at the time because I got released was obviously, you know, a blessing in disguise that really propelled me a year later to publish 2 books in 1 year. And sometimes not even in the best of circumstances, but somehow I was able to, you know, work cohesively with a team at Halo Publishing International that really, really has been by my side for a long time, since for almost 2 years now, and helped guide me through that process, even through some financial situations. And they really wanted to see me prosper. And you know, when I submitted my manuscript, I submitted it to different publishing companies. They were the one that allowed me to really put my work on display because I knew that I could illustrate a book, but I wanted to prove that I could do it. Some publishing companies won't let you do that because they have illustrators for hire. And
that's
an opportunity. And that's an opportunity for them to charge you more money, make more money. But, you know, they gave me set prices. I produced all of my own work from front to back cover. And something that I'm proud of for sure. But main motivation behind it is that I just want, you know, kids of this generation to have something that they'll look back on even when they're adults. And, you know, some things are just timeless, some things are priceless. And I consider my works like this, you know, when I produce it, you know, when I start with this type of stuff in a sketchbook with pencil and pad, looking back at it is something to just be proud of. And it's going to go through generation after generation, and I'll be able to, you know, pass this gift along to my kids. And, you know, that's something that'll never leave this earth.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Let's talk about what these books are about. So what are these books about?
In a nutshell, Mally in the Middle is about my two characters that I created. like I said, almost a decade ago. They're from outer space. I developed a little continent, a little space continent that they were from. And from there, they made a crash landing onto planet Earth. Obviously, they landed in my home city of New Orleans. So when they landed in New Orleans, they, you know, kind of landed into an adventure. They go on an adventure. One of the characters kind of runs into a little bit of conflict, and it's the other character's, I guess, responsibility to help his friend out of this deal on a pickle of a situation. And from there, it just kind of teaches you about the value of friendship and going the distance to be there for a friend and just figuring things out. As far as Flower Giver Power, that's one I put a lot more, I would say, time into and thought. Not that I didn't put thought and time into the first one, but this one was special to me mainly because it was centered around one of my good friend's daughter. Not really about her, but it was random because I saw him post a picture of her one day and I just really liked her hairstyle. It just really, really gave me like young, you know, African-American black girl vibes. And I was like, man, I just want to create a character out of that. And she had a real like hairstyle that I wanted to make a character with. So I made it fun and kind of made my characters reflective of, you know, he has a bald head, I have a bald head. So I made the characters reflective of her dad who had a bald head with a beard, a daughter who had the hairstyle that his daughter had in that photo. And from there, she is a young girl that has a situation that she thought was a mistake, but that mistake turns into something that ends up being a really, really beautiful disaster, I like to call it. And it really teaches you the value of making mistakes and because you never know what you can learn from it. So,
Oh, cool. And you made both of them, you made both books, wrote both books in within 1 year. Is that what you said?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, wow. So how, I know I don't write books, but I've heard it can be a tenuous thing to do. So how were you able to do two books in 1 year? That seems like quite a feat.
Main thing was I always found myself doing it at the most random times, sometimes very, very late at night, couldn't sleep, or I might be on a flight. And I just had my iPad handy. Sometimes I had my phone handy. More often than not, it would be on my phone or my iPad. I would just go on my notes. I would put my manuscript together. When I got back home, I could revise it, copy and paste it into a Word document, send it off to my publishing company, get their feedback. And then from there, we put it in motion. If it looks good and sounds good to me, looks good and sounds good to them. From there, we put it into production. Obviously, I go from manuscript first, and then I put those words into pictures to match it and take you through time throughout the story. And yeah, that's how I was able to do it. It was really, really, really tough. I would be honest with you and tell you that I have missed deadlines at times, mainly because you know, sometimes I'm just busy and working in this type of field. When I was in Houston, I was a lot more busy, but that gave me a lot of flexibility also in my downtime, and I just took it seriously enough to really get the job done before 2019 ended. So
to keep going,
so coming into 2020, it just gives me more, you know, fuel to my fire to really feel like, well, can we go for 3 this year? Can we go for 4 this year? You know, so we'll see.
You'll see. All right. Yeah, the creative juices are flowing now, and I guess you already know the path and the process to get it done now. So it's kind of I guess it'll be a little bit easier for you this time around. Next time around.
Yeah.
All right. So yeah, you mentioned that you have the publishers were kind of helping you and guiding you and assisting you with the process. But I can imagine it was a lot of work to try and find the right publishers, because I know a lot of publishers, it's tough to find someone to do the books for you. So how long did that take for you? Was it I'm sure that was a pretty long process as well to try and find someone to publish these for you.
Yeah, honestly, I would say that's probably the hardest part. Just seeing who's really a good fit for you, you know, doing your own research, going on their website, seeing what type of success, whether they have, you know, accolades, whether they, you know, some of their authors have won awards, seeing who they promote the most, seeing what genre, you know, they're really, really serious about, who do they promote the most, what type of success that they've had within that company. And like I said, something just felt right with Halo Publishing. I even liked the name, to be honest with you. But cool, and then working with, you know, this particular young lady at the time, she really, really guided me throughout the process. Her name is Mary Beth. She's no longer with the company, but she was really, really good and really hands-on, always followed up with me in email, held me accountable through almost 2 years of work. So seeing her go, obviously, makes me go to my drawing board and really reconsider this whole publishing company. But, you know, they just felt like the right fit for me. Some of the others, they were a little bit more pricey, didn't have as many options when it came to the production and print and publishing and things like that. So, yeah. So Halo is where I plan to stay until further notice. Like I said, who knows? Hopefully I can develop my own publishing company someday, and we'll go from there.
Nice, nice. So, So I mentioned at the top that they're available on Amazon. Is that the only place you can get them? Do you have a website for them as well, or is it just strictly Amazon?
Yeah, so I'm fixing a few things. So the website is under maintenance right now, but it should be back up and running in a few weeks. But you can find the book on all available platforms, actually, like Books a Million, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Goodreads. So the book is very, very widespread. So that's the coolest part about it, that when people ask me these types of questions, I can always direct them to wherever they kind of sell books at, for them, like the main, you know, the main platforms that sell books. And, you know, it's been out long enough to this point where people have read the books and now they're able to sell it for resale. So the more people that this book touches, the better off we'll be.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Having books like these with positive messages, with minority characters, young black women with being a main character, you don't see many of those. So having books like yours out there is definitely a good thing to have to promote and to have people read and to spread the word about. So yeah, great job with what you have out there for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's finish off with what I call the top of the mountain moment. So kind of looking back on your football journey and all the things you've gone through and all the highs and lows, the obstacles you've overcome, the favorite memories, favorite stories. Is there a favorite moment that you want to mention, or words of wisdom? How would you like to finish things off here?
Main thing I would say that some people know, some people don't know. Main thing I would say, and that people have known me for, is that I've always been the hardest worker in the room. Even to this day, no matter what environment I'm in, people always seem to notice how hard I work. So I know at some point, even as we sit here and have these conversations, you know, the next time we do a podcast, God willing, I'll be in a whole nother situation and we'll be talking about more exciting things. But one thing that stands out to me most that I'm really, really proud of is the way I bounced back in my career at Tulane. I went into Tulane as a wide receiver.
Oh, really? Okay.
I went into Tulane as a wide receiver. Like I said, I always worked hard, but for some reason, I just didn't feel like I could sniff the field as a freshman, kind of as a sophomore too. So towards the end of my sophomore year, you know, I just had a moment where a coach kind of realized, like, you might be a great DB. I really wasn't trying to hear it at the time, but, you know, I was like, yeah, I'll give it a shot. So I went into training camp, you know, got torched a few times and then got really sick and tired of it to where I really locked down and, you know, focused on my craft. And, you know, just as I started getting hot and getting into position, you know, for a starting role or even a backup role, I took a year off from Tulane and I got suspended for a year. So from that year, I sat out for an entire year, not even knowing if I would get my scholarship back, not even knowing if I would go back to Tulane. And, you know, that's where I really, really got acquainted with Derek Joseph. And from that year on, I focused the whole entire year and presented myself back to my head coach, who was a new head coach at the time. He trusted me. I trusted him. My AD and I had a great relationship. And like I said, it taught me a lot about the value of networking. And you never know, you know, what impact you might have on people or what impression, you know, always being aware of what type of impressions that you leave on people. Because if I would have just been that young, small community guy going into Tulane with the wrong attitude, the chances of my AD taking me back at Tulane and giving me my full scholarship back would have been little to none. But, you know, that taught me a lot about the value of really getting out there, stepping outside of your comfort zone and talking to people. I always like to say when people, you know, ask me about him or they told me they met him and he talks about me a lot, I talk about him a lot. But One thing I'm most thankful for, probably my whole Tulane experience, is definitely Rick Dixon. That was my athletic director at the time. And, you know, I've seen Rick's house. I've been around Rick's family. Rick got me a job when I got kicked out of school for a year. So, the ties are really, really deep. But, the message that I would leave with any youngster, any guy, any person really is that no matter how far, you know, you seem to fall, you can always really bounce back from these situations and learn something from it. Because who would have thought that I would have made it to the NFL following a suspension of a year and then come back my senior year and be one of the leaders on that team to take that Tulane team to a bowl game for the first time in 11 years. So, wow, you know, it seemed really surreal at the time. But, you know, I look back at it and I got a lot to be proud of. So.
Well, definitely. Yeah, definitely a lot to be proud of. Great story of kind of restoration coming back from, like you said, the things that you overcome at Tulane, and to be able to achieve a goal and to make it to the NFL is something to definitely be proud of. So, Jordan, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure, been a great interview. Great hearing your story. And again, for those who want to get in touch with you, can you share your tags on social media that they can find you?
So I can be found on Instagram at Abraham, like regular Abraham Thinking, THINKIN, no G. And on Twitter, I can be found at Sullen Season, my last name, SULLEN, Season altogether. And on Facebook and platforms like that, I can just be found by my first and last name.
Okay, sounds good. I'll have all those in the show notes as well for people so they can click on those. And again, if you want some great reading material, check out his new books that are out. Titles are Flower, Flower, Give Her Power, and the other is Mally in the Middle. All right, and I'll have the links to those as well for people to click on those as well. So, Jordan, thank you so much, and it's been a pleasure.
All right, absolutely, man. Thank you for having me.
No problem. All right, Jordan, take care.
Thank you for listening to After the Gridiron. If you're a fan of the show, please make sure you subscribe to the show and also leave a rating and review. By doing that, you also help to spread the word about the podcast and assist others in finding the show so more people can enjoy this great content. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, with the links to those being found on the website. Your support is very much appreciated. Also, please visit the resources page on the website for links to our sponsors and affiliates. Your support helps to keep the show running. So go to www.atgridiron.com/resources to check them out. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you when we kick off our next episode.